This episode is brought to you by Element, spelled L-M-N-T. What is Element? It's a delicious sugar-free electrolyte drink mix. As a coach, we are constantly trying to find the best products for our athletes to train and compete at their highest level. Element is a great alternative to other commercial recovery and performance drinks and has enough sodium, potassium, and magnesium to get you feeling and performing your best. Plus, it has zero sugar, no artificial ingredients, and is gluten-free. With eight delicious flavors, you are guaranteed to find one your taste buds will love. I know our athletes love the citrus salt. We keep a variety box in the office, and our athletes stop by every day on their way to practice and games to load up. At this point, they won't even touch another product. With amazing products and sponsors like Element, our podcast would not be possible. Right now, when you click on our affiliate link and place your first Element order, Element will give us 100% commission. Element might have the best return policy on the planet. If you don't love it, you'll be instantly refunded.
Our next partner has a product I use every day. I started taking Athletic Greens because I wanted a simple all-in-one solution as opposed to the ever-changing variety of supplements I have been taking for as long as I can remember. Sometimes up to 3 ramekins a day full of pills and powders trying to find the right formula for peak performance. Now that I've been taking Athletic Greens for a few months, I love it and I will never go back. With one delicious scoop of Athletic Greens, you're absorbing 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole food-sourced superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens to help you start your day right. This special blend of ingredients supports your gut health, your nervous system, your immune system, your energy, recovery, focus, and aging. I take one scoop in the morning on an empty stomach, and an additional one in the evening when I am feeling run down. I've seen such a difference in my own performance that I recently ordered additional AG1 for the rest of my family to use. It costs you less than $3 a day, you're investing in your health, and it's cheaper than your cold brew habit and supports better sleep quality and recovery in addition to mental clarity and alertness. Right now, it's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition. It's just one scoop and a cup of water every day. That's it. No need for a million different pills and supplements to look out for your health. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free 1-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/contacts. Again, this is athleticgreens.com/contacts to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. Welcome to the Contacts Coaching Podcast, dedicated to bringing you practical ideas from coaches, sharing what they have learned throughout their career. The show is designed to serve as a digital database of mentorship from a wide network of coaches whose innovative, reflective, and diverse knowledge may offer ideas to enhance your experience. In addition to sport-specific expertise, each episode also dives into the ways in which culture, strategy, and tactics can cross from one discipline to another. I'm your host, Justin Klein.
Welcome back to the Contacts Coaching Podcast. We are joined today by Brooke Higgins, head boys water polo coach at Stevenson School. Coach, 30 years later, we're here. What's good?
30 years is good, man. It wasn't long ago that we were just pirates trying to carve out our own careers on me in the pool and you in the court.
Yep, exactly. Let's dive in. Why don't you take us through your background, help the audience understand who we're dealing with here, how you got where you are, and what were the steps along the way?
Good. First and foremost, thanks for having me on your pod. I've listened to several episodes, even since the Jerry Moss episode. Shout out to Coach Moss. And so I'm humbled to be here. I think you've got a lot of just amazing people here and that I've learned a ton from. And I don't know that I'm going to share and impart a lot of lessons other than my journey. And I think that's what you do with this, right? It's just like, where are y'all coming from? And I will say, honestly, I never, ever thought that I would be a head water polo coach. I've been a lifelong player and started playing when I was about 11 years old, was a swimmer before that, and figured out that swimming with a ball was a lot more fun than following a black line. And so decided to pursue that in high school. Had a pretty successful high school career, despite the turnover in coaching. and literally walked into college at Boston College thinking, hey, I heard they have a team, maybe I'll join. And had a guy see me, and I had a water polo t-shirt on. This is literally day one of college. He's, dude, do you play polo? And I'm like, yeah, he's practice tonight at 8. And I'm like, okay. And that turned into be the best thing ever, as I'm sure you got to experience yourself in college. You get to that new place and you've got a team already, right? You've got an embedded brotherhood and fraternity and dudes that have your back and guys that I'm still friends with to this day, text regularly. And so really, I thought once I graduated college, that was it. Like I kept playing, played for some masters, did some time in South America, played for some clubs down there. Just the joy of the game is what kept me in it. And never really thought I'd be in a situation to coach. Did the international thing, came back to go to business school, went to business school, did business, did corporate marketing, first for a bank, got into food service, got into franchise business. And then the recession hit and I figured, wow, I'm pretty bad at business. I was like 1 for 5 in my business ventures. And so came back to the area, this area being Monterey Peninsula, tail between the legs. What am I going to do? It's 2008 recession. I picked up a job marketing. So still doing corporate marketing for a local school supply company. Did that for a couple of years and randomly ran into Molly Bozzo of the Carmel campus fame at Stevenson. And she's like, hey, can you help me run sports for our middle school division? I'm like, oh, okay, that could be a good extra income while I'm doing this marketing that was good, but just wasn't paying well. And that's really started it, right? So I had soccer, tennis, basketball, track, other sports. I'm forgetting some that we did. And I was just coaching. I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm an athlete and I can fake it. And I'm just doing that. Meanwhile, there's another parallel story that while I was in business school, I was helping Coach Fannin here at Stevenson. So I had some years as his assistant at Stevenson, 2002, 3, 4, into 5 and 6. And so kept in touch with the program, kept in touch with Fannin, and then came back then as the AD for the middle school. And about 2 or 3 years into that, I'm like, hey, can I do water polo? That's really my jam. I'm okay with middle school soccer, but water polo is my thing. So it's probably about 2012. That I rejoined Jim Fannin and his staff, and that molded into a head JV position. And I was a developmental guy for a lot of years. And it's a position I loved. I really embraced something about just the actual teaching of egg beater and positioning and where to pass and hear the numbers. And you know, that was the teacher side in me that I always knew I had. I tried to deny it, thinking that a business career would be more economically feasible for the family. And coming into that teaching, I was like, that was great. And that was fun. Did that for almost a decade of JV head coach. And then as our varsity head coach left last year, and you did a national search, as you should. And I'm humbled to say that I was the name that came to the top. And that was it. So I'm only really a year into the varsity position. Obviously, a lot of years coaching, different sports. But the water polo thing has remained consistent. And during that time, it's worth mentioning that I did a lot of club coaching. So probably about 2019, 20, right before COVID, I started to help out with a local club, Monterey Bay United, and working with their youth development program. And that's something I continue to do to this day.
Thanks for setting that up. And we chatted briefly before we started where you were like, are you sure you want to have me on? It's like, yeah, because you're in the perfect seat to talk about what the transition is like from longtime assistant, developmental coach, lower level head to now you're sliding over 18 inches and you are in charge. So what I want to know, and it's probably real raw, so just feel free to talk as long as you need to and just let it flow. After we interviewed, after you kind of, hey, this is what I'm going to do, here's why, and now all of a sudden you're in charge. What did you realize right away that you still needed to figure out?
What do I need to figure out is what I need to figure out still. There's so much. Coming at this, not saying that I wanted to be a head varsity coach, there's a lot of newness to it. And there's a lot of stuff that it's one of those things you don't know what you don't know. And this was very much part of the interview process with you in that. It's like, hey, there's things that I just don't know about without knowing. And I haven't gone through, you know, that funnel or that preparation or that training to be in a spot where, oh yeah, I know that this is how you do scheduling. This is how you deal with reps. This is how you deal with parents. This is how you deal with challenging kids. Like some of that I've had, but it's always been like, oh, whenever the fire gets too big, it's handed off to the head person. And so knowing or not knowing that has been big. So there's plenty of things that I still need to figure out. And as I think about it, and I don't think I'm ever going to figure this out perfectly, but communication is, I think, the biggest challenge. And I feel and I say this in all humility, I'm a pretty good communicator that I excel at. That was one of my 2 degrees is in communications. At one point, I was going to be a sports broadcaster. I go back to KSBB and doing games not long after Grant Kaplan was doing games. I think he was your first guest, right?
It was on the other pod, Why Sports, if anyone wants to.
Oh, that was the other one. Right on. Okay, yeah. Shout out to a fellow BC grad as well. That was my path, is like, hey, communications. And I studied that, right? And then in the business side, I was very much on the marketing side because I get that. I know how to craft a message. I know how to deliver the message. And here I am as a head coach still saying, I got to work on it. How do I actually capture this right message that kids are going to respond? And what's the right vehicle right now? I'm not a Snapchat guy. I'm not a TikTok guy. But that's where the kids are. And that's where maybe I have to go there. And I'm a little afraid of that social media space. I'm on it and I reply. I don't necessarily post a lot. But, you know, my challenge right now is, how do I get kids committed to the process of getting better? And for a lot of our players, that can be an 8 to 10 week commitment in season, and they're off to another sport. But some of our kids want to do it long term. And from a water polo standpoint, we absolutely want 100% of our kids to go swim on the swim team. It's even more important than, say, your soccer players running cross country. And this is another coach likes to use this analogy. It's the ice skating. If you don't know how to skate, you can't play water polo, right? And so it's about your relationship with water. And so how do I get kids, how do I communicate to kids that you need to be swimming in the off season so that your water polo can be better? And I know that because I've lived it and I see it and I've coached it. But I'm failing in my communication around that. And I don't say failing, not failing the kids, just failing in the sense that these kids are playing baseball and lacrosse, and they love that. And it's great. And I know your philosophy, we all should be playing different sports. And that was one of my biggest regrets coming out of high school, is I didn't play a winter sport. I swam for a club team, but then swam in the high school season. And so it's like, how do I get to that space of really communicating that this is, and it doesn't necessarily have to be swimming. It's whatever. It could be strength training. It could be watching videos. It could be following people on social media. It could be, we have this whole handbook now that is like our whole curriculum of water polo, of can-do statements. What can you do? What can you not do? What do you need to work on? And how do I get kids to embrace that, to say, I want to be better at this? Because this is why we're doing this, is so many life lessons have come through this. And my message right now to kids is, hey, if you commit to this and you work hard at it, then when the next thing comes up that you want to be passionate about, you will already have the background of knowing what it takes to work hard. And you may not necessarily think water polo is your thing right now, and that's okay. But what I'm not quite getting across in terms of my messaging is, if you focus on this thing, that will help you in all areas of your life. And that's the deeper part of what we all do, and why sports is such a big part of our lives, is so much of our grit and resilience, and throw in the terminology that you need to do of the day, growth mindset and things like that. We've just learned through sports. So absolutely, what I continue to work on, and I'll probably be working on this until I retire, is how to communicate, how to get that right message. And that's just to the kids, not to mention communication with parents, and communication with administrators, communications with officials. I could share lots of stories about failures in that area, even though I think I'm a good communicator. Not specific to officials, but even though I think I'm a pretty good communicator. And this is also to get deeper on this, is I speak another language, right? I've learned what another culture is about. Mm-hmm. And I've learned, and I live with a Spanish speaker, that I say something and she's like, what? Like, how could dare you say that? What do you mean? And there's like this cultural element. And yeah. So I've studied this, I've lived this, and I'm still working on it.
Yeah,
I'm 100% working on communication all of the time. How is this landing with this person? I'm always second guessing that.
Well, and I think I would say the majority of our conflict probably arises from miscommunication, as we zoom out 10,000 foot view in any scenario we're in. And the way in which you framed that, especially right there at the end, there's a cultural component of it that often we're not even thinking about that gets in the way, be it from a coach to an official, be it from one background to another, whatever it may be. And I love the way that you just shared that piece of information. And I hope people think about that in the way in which they approach any relationship that they're in, be it at home with their children, at work, whatever it is. I like that a lot. There's two things that came out of that I want to follow up on. One is shorter, so I'm going to start there, because there's a chance that some athletes coming into our school may listen to this and feel like they can try water polo. And so when you say it's a sport where you have to be playing all the time like ice skating, right? If you can't swim, you can't play the sport. I'm going to push back a little bit and say, you and I both know somebody that had no swimming background that got in and was actually pretty good. What are the couple of skills that you say translate really and why, in a short answer, for people that may want to try it? We know swimming's one, like a kid who's never played water polo before, but they're a good swimmer, can transition and be decent. And we know that being able to throw the ball really well translates. Are there other things that you've been able to nail as you get these novices that try out that you would invite? Hey, look, you don't have to understand a sport, but if you can do X, Y, and Z, it jumps you to the front of the line.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I think that even if you are a good swimmer, doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be a good water polo player. And I would say it's actually pretty rare, Patrick Powers, with the exception of, that you have an elite level swimmer that they become an elite level water polo player. Elite level swimmers can be 100% productive water polo players, but to get to that next level, like a guy like Patrick did, is pretty rare. And we get swimmers, our population, we get swimmers, especially some of the international kids, but they haven't had a team sport experience. They haven't had a ball sport experience. And so their learning curve is a little bit steeper. But to answer your question, I would say athletes, and that's any sport. We'll take any athlete. And you're talking about probably Darnell, who came in as a freshman and couldn't play football. Dude couldn't egg beater. He's one of the few players who I've ever sent through the program, if you will, and he only played 1 year, that just didn't egg beater. And I'm like, dude, you got to figure that out. Then he is putting up a half court shot against Carmel to put us over the top for that second half. And then even had a game winner against Carmel in a home game. And went on to play football. He's an amazing athlete, right? We'll take any athlete just because we say that swimming is key. And this is how I would clarify what I said before. I don't need people swimming 9 months out of the year and then showing up to play polo for 3 months. I just need players that are, and I think this is like any sport, right? Just in tune with their own movement and their own bodies and how to leverage that movement. We've had plenty of non-swimmers be very successful at Stevenson and have been huge players for us and productive players. We've been very blessed with the last 5 or 6 years of some D1, some D3 talent, but we're not going anywhere if we don't have those roles around them. And those are guys that have come in from baseball, that have come in from lacrosse and come in from other sports. And because they understand movement and because they've been doing movement and whatever that is, right? We've had surfers, we've had lacrosse players, anything. So what I look for, someone that shows up on deck, first of all, and if any athlete is listening to this, if you're going to show up on the water polo deck, you're 100% welcome. Absolutely. We want everyone to try it. If you try it and you're like, too hard for me, mad respect, you come to coach and say, hey, just not feeling it. Niall's a perfect example. Coach, glad I tried it. It's too hard. I'm going to go do this. Great. Come back anytime. So any athlete that wants to go for it, the door's wide open. And we've had some non-athletes show up. We got a spot for you. We'll figure that out. We're in a good spot now that we haven't had to do cuts in about 5 or 6 years, mostly because we figured out spots for those guys in that we've had a developmental team. We've got managers that actually will practice with us. I think about Ian Duffy years back. He would practice with us and then he'd be doing our book. So we'll find spots for you. So I would like to say that water polo is very welcoming. A lot of people come in and just automatically assume that, oh, it's water, I can't do it, so I'm not going to do it, right? But I would flip that and say, don't be afraid of the water. That's the easy part. Like, we'll figure that part out, right? Can you throw? Great. If not, we'll teach you. Like, we do a lot. You see that with our JV guys. We're actually going through those stuff that you were doing with fourth and fifth grade softball players. Point, step, throw. That's what we do, right? So really just athletes. And then I would just say, if you're curious, just be curious. You know, just want to learn something. If you're curious... And that's not a water polo thing. That's not an athletics thing. I think that's, for me, a life philosophy thing. It's, what's your curiosity level? Are you super curious? Great. Come in here. You'll learn a ton. If you already come in and I'm not that interested, I'm not that curious, I don't want to learn, then we don't want you. But that has nothing to do with your swimming ability, your athletic ability, your throwing ability. That's just more about your mindset.
Thank you for clarifying that, because I do think there is a unintentional bar of entry at times to people trying new things. And field hockey is a perfect example. When our new students sign up for sports, field hockey is always one of the last that people are willing to try because they don't know what it is. And ultimately, it's like they've heard of volleyball, they've heard of tennis, they've heard of golf. And even though, like, you're not making our golf team unless you're really good, they would rather do that than try something they don't know. So I love the way that you frame that, and that just being in tune with your body translates. And I think it does in every single sport. I want to go back to your transition to being the head coach and what you realized you needed to figure out. And I want to be as specific as you can, and I'll let you pick one or two things, but what are some failures you had this year or some fumbles that have informed not only how you're going to approach this upcoming season, but also informed how you approached your club season because of how powerful that lesson was during your first year as a head coach of a high school program? What are some things that you can offer that was like, I thought I had this dialed and it caught me out of left field. And now going into this second year, and I tried some things out in the club season, maybe this is where I'm pushing my chips in because of that lesson.
Oh, well, there's two stories with this answer. One is the old one, and I'll do that first because this was just me understanding kind of game management and what I've learned over the years. This isn't answering the specific question to last year, but I'll come back to that one. What I've learned over the years, and this is probably the hardest thing, when you come from as a player, you're in the water controlling the game, and now all of a sudden you're on the sidelines and you actually have no control, even though you think you have control. Quick story, this was early in my time. This is probably 2003. And Coach Fannin let me run the JV game. We're at Gilroy. And we had a kid, I think his name was Parker. You might remember him. He was an athlete that couldn't play football and decided to play water polo. And we just put him all over because he was just an athlete. And in this particular situation, he's in goal, but not a tremendously experienced player. We got 20 seconds on the clock and I call timeout and I say, Parker, you're going to go up, right? So it's kind of like pulling the goalie, right? You're going to go up, high ball game, pull the goalie. We're going to have 7 seconds. Here's the play we're going to run. Ready, go. You got it? Good, got it. So Parker goes out there. But a little rule in water polo that to start play, you actually have to put the ball in play by popping it up, right? Because what that says is the defense can now guard you, right? And what you have is about 3 seconds to do that. It's kind of like getting an inbound pass. You got to get it in 5 seconds. That's weird in water polo because you're in play already, right? So Parker didn't remember this rule. He didn't pop it. Ref calls a turnover. Gilroy picks the ball up, full court shot. Because we have no goalie, they win the game. So that for me was like, I can't joystick this whole thing. As a coach, that was a big lesson for me to say, I need to be way more prepared for that moment than what I thought was brilliant at that moment. Yeah, great, let's go. Parker, you're coming out here. We're going to run this pick. You're going to wrap around, right? We got this dial, ready. And the team was pumped, right? Let's go. Yeah, we got this. Let's go. Turnover goal, lost the game. Didn't even tie, lost the game. And of course, Fannin in his wisdom was like, yeah, that's why I don't call timeout in JV games. Just because you can't manage that stuff. That's the micromanagement stuff that I had to learn over the years, that you just can't joystick it. And even water polo, right? Water polo, we are above the pool, right? Like you as a hoops coach or a football coach, you're field level, right? We actually see more. Like we can see more than the players see. We can actually see that guy's grabbing you, right? We can actually see that. But getting into this past year, I think that all my whole career, I've told players that, and I loved your line about officials, they're all blind, cheating people that hate you or something like that. I've told my teams, officials never determining our outcome, right? And the day an official has a perfect game, and I should say, when we have a perfect game, we can complain about the officiating. And so that's always been my mantra, right? It's the officials of the officials. But you know this, in our CS semifinal game, we had an official that dictated the game. And it was really a weird experience for me. He was calling rules that were old rules that were not in the new rule book to our detriment, right? And so sure enough, here it is, the end of the game. I'm livid and I'm not a thrower or a tosser. I'm ready to break a clipboard. And in the back, I was like, nah, don't break the clipboard. That's not worth it. But livid, right? And had to sit with that on the bus ride back from Palo Alto. Lots of F-bombs. Lots of just feeling like the victim. But you got to come back to it, right? And so what is it that you take away from that? And I got deep, and you know this, right? I got deep. I got video of the game and charted out every moment in which it was a very biased call that we felt, sent the video to an unbiased official who came back and was like, yeah, there's probably about 4 or 5. I had about 8 or 9. He's like, yeah, there's probably about 4 or 5. But here's the thing, right? Here's the lesson in all of that. I can't go back and change that, right? And what I'm sitting with, and I don't think I have a complete answer to your question, because I'm making adjustments. Yes. Are they going to be successful? I don't know yet. I don't know. Here it is, year two. But what I've sat with, and you've had these moments too, and I think all coaches have, is I got outcoached that game. It wasn't about the ref. I got absolutely outcoached by, and props to Trevor Weens, who's SoCal High head coach. And I'll just give him props. And I did later. I was like, yo, man, you just outcoached me that. He came with a game plan to intentionally drive on our better players so that they would get kicked out. It's much like basketball. You get five personal fouls, you're out. Water polo, it's three and you're out. And that was his game plan. And what I can look back on and realize is I did not make the in-game adjustment to figure that out. And instead, I got hung up on the officiating and did nothing about it. And that's the adjustment that I'm making. So two of them, right? So two of those adjustments. Number one is to no longer say that dismissive, it's never going to be the officials, is to embrace that and be like, yeah, the officials can dictate the outcome of the game. We just have to be better about it, right? We just have to be better at how we control that, right? And then number two, it is, hey, we're recognizing that this team is doing X, Y, or Z, and it's working against us. We need to change that and not get hung up on the other thing that's louder, which is the parents barking at the officials, our coaches barking at the officials. That's much louder. That's more urgent, right? If you think about an urgent and important scale, if you've ever done that kind of activity, that's more urgent. But what's important is saying, you know, we need to make the in-game adjustment, understand, okay, this official is calling it that way. That's not what we know, but that's how it's going. And so we need to adjust.
Yes. And I love that you went to that example, because I remember us having a conversation in here. And to clarify for those listening, I'm actually wearing the shirt from PGC. The mantra is all refs are blind cheaters that hate you. Not that's real, but you need to adopt that mindset as an athlete and as a coach, so that when things happen that are beyond your control, you don't spend any emotional energy or bandwidth on it. And I think the sooner that we can get there as coaches and athletes, the sooner we can then focus on things that are in our control. And truthfully, the vulnerability you had to say, I got out coached in that moment, is something that is years beyond your experience as a head coach. Because the sooner you can get there and realize that I went after the refs because I wasn't prepared to counter the coaching decisions that were going on, is eternally empowering for the next few years of your life, versus we got hosed. It's no, what role did I play in that? And I think that's the hardest thing to do as a coach, is to look within rather than external to come up with whatever excuses we may have. And I love that you came up with that. I want to ask, as part of that, as a follow-up, when it comes to building culture, I have the privilege, and I say this pretty much on every episode, of sitting here and looking out of my window to watch you guys practice all the time. And I've always been fascinated by a few things. One, what's it like having to coach a sport where you can't physically demonstrate something to an athlete? I've always been blown away by like how good you have to be as a communicator to be able to coach in that way. I don't necessarily want to dive into that, but what I did want to follow up on is the things that your group, going back to Fannin and then Frank and now you and all the assistants that we've had that have been great contributors to the program, from a culture standpoint, and what you guys have always done really well about having a consistent culture throughout the program, is what are some of the things that you intentionally held on to from the previous regime that, say you were to leave tomorrow and take a job somewhere else, that they would go with you, that you could offer to others that are looking to really put some stakes down in the way in which they approach things? And long-winded question to get to the point. People talk about culture all the time, but I'm always after the thing that somebody could appropriate. And you've seen us on our basketball team where like we hug before practice, we hug after practice. It's a minimal thing, but it has empowered our guys to say that they love one another, to us as coaches, little things like that you have held on to from before and that you would keep with you through whatever job you have.
Hmm. Oh, that's a pretty deep question. Real quick on the first question, I just have people in the water demonstrate for me. I just know these guys do it and they do it for me, right? And sometimes we get in, right? I, as head coach, I haven't gotten in as often, but you know that some of our coaches will get in the water and demonstrate that. And if there's a particular kid, you're like, no, you need to see it this way, right? And we'll bring in guest coaches and they'll be like, hey, we're going to work on our center defense, so go do that. That was the easy question. The other one, I will be honest, I think with only 1 year into this, I don't think that there's a cultural element that I have implemented. I think to your point, it's been more inherited what has existed and expanded that. And I think what my biggest joy is with this program is the family that is Stevenson Water Polo, and doing alumni games and having alumni come back and hit you up. And, hey, you remember the game where, you know, against Carmel, where Jackson went into the water and then popped up and stole the ball. Nobody saw that. That was a big moment. You know that in our ball closet, we've got these pennants that hang up of places that we've sent people to go play, colleges and universities. And that for me, that was an Andy Botso idea. Hey, he just grabbed some pennants and I just found these in the college center. They were throwing them. I'm going to put some up. I'm like, dude, that's actually brilliant. We should dig deep into our family of Stevenson water polo players and chart out where they've gone. We are a very small program. We are not the Bay Area. We're not the LA basin. We're not these major factories of water polo. And we've sent kids to big programs. And it gives me great pride to even have a slice of what that is. And so celebrating the whole, you're more than just this game or this season. And that for me is the culture that I really like about Stevenson Water Polo, is that we do get players to show up, men and women, boys and girls, from multiple generations coming back to be a part of it. And they're curious and they want to know what's going on. And so I think that's something that you're asking if someone could implement in their program.
Really quickly on that, the pennant idea is gold. And I totally forgot about it till you brought it up. And then I just like, oh yeah, I just walk over there and they're all hung up, which is actually a really cool deal. And I actually love that you started with, it's my first year and I've really just expanded on a few things, but I think it's the perfect answer of, this is what I made sure I held on to from before versus people coming in and it's, I'm going to do X, Y, and Z. It's no, these things were important and we're going to keep doing them. And I think that's really what I'm getting at with the question, because if you don't have something to point to about identity, then it's just words. And I think whatever the things are that reinforce that identity are important. I think one of the things that you guys do really well that you didn't mention is that you actually sit down with the entire like coaching staff and a player after, let's call it tryouts, and you like role define right in that moment and tell them what they're going to do. And it's, that's something that I think is a big miss in most sports and most programs, that I think you guys do at an elite level. If you just give like a 60-second soundbite about that, I want to get to a different question.
Sure. As you're saying this, I think you have to remember, and I know you do, but I live with imposter syndrome every time I'm on the deck, right? I'm coming into a program that I played at, right? That should give me some cachet, but Jim Fannin did this for almost 20 years. And then Frank Reynolds was here, two-time NC2A champion, essentially Olympic level player. And then there's me. We were maybe a top 40 program at best in college on the East Coast, which is not top 20 level. And I never thought I'd be here, right? So I deal with it all the time. I just think that is, and let's just get that out of the way, right? I am constantly questioning if I'm doing the right thing. And it's not to say I don't have the confidence, and there's a certain amount of arrogance that I have to just admit. And I think we all need, right? We all need to just get up every day. But in terms of, you know, doing the work. And that was that's a Bill Walsh quote. Sorry for my Raider fans out there, but Bill Walsh says something like, are you doing the work? You ask yourself, are you doing your work? And you're like, yeah, if you're waking up in the middle of the night and talking to a tape recorder of what play you should be doing, and you're not eating right, and you're sacrificing your family. Yeah, you're doing the work, right? So I'm doing the work. It's there. But what you mentioned is something that we started, and I would like to think it was a collaboration between Frank and I. We didn't do this in the Fannin years. It's something that I started to do with the JV guys because we had to do cuts. And so we didn't want to make it something that like, hey, I call you out of the water, you're cut, right? So I made it like, I'm going to meet with every player and say, here's where I see you right now. And if that player is, I'm sorry, we don't have a spot for you this year, then everybody got the talk and only a few then left. And I think Frank latched onto that and said, I like that. And so we did it with the varsity team. And it was a lot easier when you had 2 weeks of preseason. This year, we only have 1 week. I got to figure out when I can do it, because you know this, it takes time. And you think about anything you do in the classroom, you're like, hey, I want to do one-on-one. I'm a Spanish teacher, so I want to do one-on-one speaking assessments. So I got to give everyone else some other work to do that they have to do, even if I'm not right there, and I have to trust that they're going to go do that. So that's a big part of our culture. Hey, if coach is off talking to Climo or talking to a parent or off the deck, not off the deck because we're always there, we're always watching it. But if we're not exactly engaged in that moment, you're still working hard. And this is what we talk about a lot with our team. It's a true measure of your character is what you do when no one's looking. And that resonates with a lot of kids. So we have to, that culture set up so that we can actually say, hey, we're going to be at a desk over here while you guys are doing your shooting drills and whatever. And this is where we lean on our seniors to be like, set the tone, because we're going to meet with every single one of you. And we lay it out. And I think the kids respond to it. And this is very much that communication of the coaches and the player. Here's where we see you. Here's what we think you need to work on. What do you think about that? And it's a little bit talking at, because with three of us coaches and some of us more verbose than others, the kid just has to take it and listen. But we also don't finish until they've said everything they have to say and they ask every single question they have. And I think it's good because those are things we can come back to. We can come back to, hey, week two, hey, you said you were going to be anticipating the counter. You're going to get out on that and you're not. So how are you helping us right now? What are you working on right now that's going to help us? And we also celebrate it. Hey, this player said he's going to get on the counter early. Look, he's doing it, right? That's what he told us, right? Kudos to you. We're all better for that now. Mm-hmm. So I think it's big. I'm glad you mentioned that because I don't necessarily think that's individual to our program, but absolutely, that is a must activity every preseason.
You'd be surprised in regards to you actually named it. We didn't do that when Fannin was here. We started it as a result of me having to cut kids, and now we will always do that. And yeah. I think when teams struggle, be it professional teams, be it business teams, be it academic teams, right? 7 times out of 10, it's because there's not clear role definition. And I think that goes for players, that goes for coaches, it goes for administrators, it goes for teachers. That is an easy place to find a complaint. And therefore, the fact that you guys tackle that is unique. And I think it's something that people could steal from. And there's a million ways to do it. I line the guys up on the baseline and just tell them, like, this is, you're a shooter, you're a driver, you're a ball changer. Coach, what's a ball changer? That means you get it and you throw it to another guy.
And you know this, you have to be careful about pigeonholing kids too, because you don't want to all of a sudden set them in a fixed mindset that they can't get out of.
Correct.
And then you say, hey, here's where I see you now.
Yep.
You want to do more? This is what it's going to be. And then you put it on them. Do you want to do more? Oh yeah, coach, I want to do more. Okay, great. Then you need to do X, Y, and Z. Some of them are like, no, coach, I'm happy with my role. I'm good with that.
Yep.
And you're like, okay, maybe you want to try this to expand your what you can offer.
Yeah.
And so it's a tough dance in terms of like labeling, but then also saying, here's how you're going to help.
Yep. And it's what you just said is super important. This is your role right now, right? So how can you challenge your athletes to star in the role they have while training for the role that they want? And ultimately, there's an aspirational aspect to it, but it will be the equivalent of, hey, I'm going to come down there and be the language department chair today because I feel like it. And I slept at a Holiday Inn Express last night, and that's not going to help us. But if I continue to run my department, you continue to run your department, we're going to have success together. Let me ask this. We're going way back to when you were the middle school AD and you're wearing an Oakland A's hat. And I know you're a big baseball fan. You were traveling around your stadium tour this summer. But what have you learned watching other sports that you have been able to apply to your water polo coaching? And my soapbox is, look, people need to be multidisciplinary for as long as they can. And I feel like as coaches, we often get trapped in the vacuum of, I can only study this discipline, when there's a ton of things you can steal from something that has nothing to do with your sport.
This wasn't on the pre-question list. I watch sports all the time, right? Like, I'm a nut. Literally, if you were to pull up what things do I watch on my TV, it's 99% sports that I'm choosing, right? And if I'm sitting here with the wife, then we're watching other stuff. But yeah, I will watch go in live to a minor league baseball game just to see what's going on there or whatever that is. I don't have a concrete answer for you right now. I probably have to sit on it for a little bit to say what specifically, but I am pulling stuff all the time. How's that coach talking to that player? Player had a bad moment, see him go to the sideline. Everyone else is watching the ball, watching the action. I'm like, yo, what's coach doing over there? How is coach dealing with that official in that moment? Even practices. And this is always fun for me to go in the club circuit. You just get exposure and you show up to a tournament. We're at JO or a JO Quals. There's 30, 40 teams there. How are they running warm up? I know that's not your question. This is about different sports. But
well, it's not actually. I changed the question just to mess with you to force you out of water polo. But I love that you brought it back to water polo. Go ahead.
Good. And, oh, boy, that's a good drill. Why don't I do that? Or when you were at the league meeting last night, hey, here's this video, right? Or here's this coaching platform. Go check it out. I try and be cautious about how much I want to really jump into this because I can be a workaholic and like really dive deep and then sacrifice other responsibilities. But I do dive deep into some of these coaching philosophies and what people are doing and what's working for them. And so far, my professional development has been mostly on the job, but I have been able to explore some different spaces and say, hey, what does that coach do? What do they say? Adam Krikorian is head women's coach for our national team. And you remember we hosted the USA versus Australia. I soak his stuff up. He's got some videos on USA water polo. And I'm like, I'm all over that. And I had a chance to meet him then and ran into him in a tournament last summer. Actually, that was the last fall. He was at that SNR Cup when we were down in Southern California. And it was just be like, coach, all right, hey. But just soaking up whatever I can. And I mentioned Bill Walsh. I read a lot of his stuff, even though I'm a Raider fan. So it's just, it's pulling from whatever. And I think for me, it's always like, how would that work for us? And sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's, nope, that's not what we can do either at our level or with our people. But most of the time it is. Most of the time it's, oh yeah, heck yeah, I could absolutely do that. One of the things that I've learned to do over the years is just a lot more games, in games, like a lot more. And this is part of the generation that we coach is in the old days. It's, hey, here's the thing, work hard and then you're done. But my joy from water polo is just from being in those game moments. And so it's incorporating a lot more games into your practice. And I'm not saying full court scrimmages because the kids watch, hey, coach, can we scrimmage? And they know not to, hey, don't ask the S word to coach. Because if you say scrimmage to me, we're not scrimmaging. But I try and mask other things in games, and whether it's like a steal the bacon version that we do in the water or even just competitions. So those are things I always try and incorporate. Yep, there's definitely some grind. There's always some grind, but club level all the way to the high school stuff. And it's what I've seen in other sports. It's make a game out of it. Baseball is perfect for that, right? Fungo, like that's an awesome drill and it's a game, right? So let's do that in a water polo atmosphere. Let's do a teeny tiny 3-on-3, small court, small kind of thing. Like, you know, I'm sure you've seen some of this stuff where why are Brazilians so good at soccer? It's because they play futsal, which is just a much smaller space, right? So, oh, okay, great. How can I do that in water polo? And UCS will go short course. We got short course, right? Where we're like in a really teeny tiny area and it's all about passing and movement and less about who's the fastest to get down the pool.
Yeah. I think that's important that within your discipline, you're looking at different ways to attack instruction and also outside in the way in which you find ways to apply behaviors. And it doesn't always translate directly, but there are things that can be found. And if you're not thinking outside the box, then especially with this generation of athlete, you're going to have a tough time engaging them. Two more questions. This one's on the form, so I'll give you this one, and then I'll give you one that's not on the form. You most recently changed your mind on. It doesn't have to be about sports, just something I used to be over here and now I'm over here and here's why.
I think and you had this question before. I honestly don't know how to answer this one because I think it's a continuous evolution. I think that I continue to look at what's the most effective way to do this. I've changed my mind on some real basic things from a perhaps scheduling standpoint. I think when we had the previous players that we had, it was about getting down to LA and being in Southern California and being in that environment so they could see it. You know, that's the whole kind of goldfish environment of goldfish only grows is as big as the bowl it's in, and we want to be out there. I've changed my mind a little bit on that because I know that we don't have to travel as far and we can get very competitive games. I've changed my mind on, really, this is a bigger water polo thing. I'm working on changing my mind. How about I put it this way? Water polo is, for a lot of areas, a pretty exclusive sport. Obviously, the swimming is a big barrier to entry, but even as you get deeper into this, and I've learned this in the past year, there are some conversations and meetings that are happening that not everyone is invited to. And the scenario that we dealt with in terms of one of our best players of all time getting third team LCS, a guy that's now in the national development pipeline. And I learned that was because there's a handful of dudes that get together and use the CS name and claim their own, take their own players and make them into all CCS players. And so I'm trying to change my mind about how important that is to me, because that was obviously a moment I was like, hey, I thought I did everything I needed to do to be involved in that conversation, and I wasn't. I'm also changing my mind about where we are as a peninsula in terms of water polo. I think we are in a place where we have to accept that we don't have the families that they might have in the Bay Area and in Southern California that are ready for year-round travel. And I don't think we should. I think there's other things that we should do. I think our population is more in, you know, South County and Salinas, and that's where I'd like to see some more water polo go. And so I'm trying to be a part of that. I know that's a much, much bigger conversation, but we're faced with some pool space issues where we are, that we could be in those areas, and there's other pools. And that's another thing too, is what I've learned from our area, from our 831 area code, is Bay Area people, LA people, which are the general hotbeds of water polo. These are, as you think of the population that plays water polo, that's generally more moneyed populations that, let's just call it like it is, they might have a pool in their backyard, right? And that gives them a lot more touches than I might actually be able to do, because I'm getting kids two or three times a week in a club season. So I've got to figure out how to change my mind around that one. And maybe I have to change it so that we're not measuring our success against those established programs that have that. Like, we have to look at different measures of success. Maybe our measure of success is more about how many kids we can actually get playing, right? Or how many kids we can teach the game to. That's different, right? That's not saying, oh, you have how many, you're XYZ club and you have three all CS players and you get to go on Instagram and highlight that. I don't know. What if we're like, yo, we taught 20 kids from Salinas how to do a 1-2 pick. Isn't that a big moment? Isn't that what we should all be all about? So we all can have that joy of playing the game. I got into some club teams in the Chicago area that we were on the south side of Chicago, and dudes are just drowning dudes on defense, like just literally grabbing you and holding you under the water. And that for me is, there's some other successes that don't necessarily have to be, we got 17th place in Junior Olympics. So I don't know. There's a lot there. I don't have specific stuff. I think I'm changing my mind on a lot of things, but this is the fun space for me. And this is where, as a generally very curious person, I'm curious to see where this journey is going to go for me and how I'm going to continue to evolve. There's a lot of stuff I need to do better, and I'm curious to figure out those things as I get deeper into this.
Yeah, great answer. And there's actually a lot of things I wrote down that we're going to talk about offline here when we're done. But let's wrap with this. This is my new question I'm playing with, and it's okay. A variety of answers the couple times I've asked it. But what is an insult you've received that you're proud of?
What is an insult I received that I'm proud of? Oh, goodness.
Or if you don't want to go there, Higgs, you can go with, what's the best compliment you've ever received?
I think the insult's easier one to come up with. No, I will say, in terms of the insults that I'm proud of, and I'll stick to the water polo space, I think those are the ones where in-game, there's some trash talking, and there's some things that I won't say on your podcast that people have said to me, that you take them out of context, they're absolutely hurtful. You understand in the game that someone's trying to get under your skin, or they're trying to do something to get you off your game, or they're just frustrated, like you can't do anything. And so they do something, right? Where they say something, or water polo is a very physical game. I've had places touched that shouldn't be, right? And this is a space where you're like, dude, what are you doing? Like, why are you doing that? But then, and this is where I would hope we all can land, is my favorite, absolute most favorite part of the game, and the one I kind of treasure the most, is the post-game handshake. That's such a moment for me. And I am, as a coach, you know, the lineup in water polo is supposed to be goalie goes first, all the players, then coaches are last, head coaches last. More times than not last year, I'm like, I'm humbled to be the last guy in the line and be that last coach. But those are those moments where no matter what happened in the pool, and I'm thinking more of a player perspective, right? Because the smack talking doesn't happen to the coaches that at least I hear about. But as a player, having those moments, I remember a game against Queens College in college where this guy was all over me, and we're in each other's business and lots of shots fired and physicality. This guy, he hates me. He hates me. What's going on? And then at the end of the game, it's a handshake. Let's say, hey, good game, good game. And the adult years, or the analogy would be like, let's go get beers together. And that's the space that I love, right? So it's like that moment of battle where emotions are on tilt, and people say things that they might not necessarily think, or maybe they do. But then at the end, when that final whistle goes, we're shaking hands. We're like, good game. Let's do it again. Let's go back at it. And I'm sure you've been in the same space. Water polo has been such a place for me to release some of that anger that we have, or frustration with whatever's going on. And then to match it with that joy of that love, if you will, I'll use that word, that love that you can have for your fellow players, for your teammates. That makes me proud. It makes me proud to be able to be in the trenches and then pull out and be like, good game, let's do it again.
Yeah, no, great answer. Appreciate the way in which you frame that. Appreciate having you on, Coach. You got another few days to get ready for your season here, and thanks for taking the time to get this one in.
Okay, thank you. Really appreciate it.
This podcast was also brought to you by ttroops.com. As coaches, our inboxes get flooded with noise on how to make your program better. TeachHoops.com will get you focused on what needs to get done. One thing you've heard from these podcasts is no matter the experience, you got to keep pushing yourself to be better. Coach Steve Collins will help you direct that noise. He is there to help you. He has the credentials as a coach, and he's never turned down a Teach Hoops member. Sign up for a plan at TeachHoops.com and mention us at checkout. This site is here simply to help you be better. Take advantage and see you on the court. Remember, go to teachhoops.com.
This episode is brought to you by Element, spelled L-M-N-T. What is Element? It's a delicious sugar-free electrolyte drink mix. As a coach, we are constantly trying to find the best products for our athletes to train and compete at their highest level. Element is a great alternative to other commercial recovery and performance drinks and has enough sodium, potassium, and magnesium to get you feeling and performing your best. Plus, it has zero sugar, no artificial ingredients, and is gluten-free. With 8 delicious flavors, you're guaranteed to find one your taste buds will love. I know our athletes love the citrus salt. We keep a variety box in the office, and our athletes stop by every day on their way to practice and games to load up. At this point, they won't even touch another electrolyte product. Without amazing products and sponsors like Element, our podcast would not be possible. Right now, when you click on our affiliate link and place your first Element order, Element will give us 100% commission. Last thing, Element might have the best return policy on the planet. If you don't love it, you'll be instantly refunded.